Thank you, Madam Secretary. Would you kindly take the roll?
Senator Sayles?
Here.
Senator Morgeau?
Here.
Senator Brown?
Here.
Senator Curdy?
Here.
Senator Flowers?
Here.
Senator Gillespie?
Here.
Senator Lang?
Here.
Senator Lynch?
Excuse.
Senator Small?
Here.
Senator Usher?
Here.
Chair Wellborn?
Here. Thanks, Jason.
Members, we're still waiting for sponsors to come in, so if you want to poll, we can do some executive action. House Bill 289 that we heard the other day, Representative Oblander's bill, there is an amendment that was just passed out. If you would pull that one from your committee or from your folder, we can act on that. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House Bill 289 to concur.
Thank you. And there is an amendment, I believe, being offered. Would you move that amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thought I was hearing voices. I'd like to move HB 289.002.002 to pass.
All right, discussion on the amendment. Jason, would you give us a little walkthrough?
Sure, Mr. Chair. So House Bill 289 is related to owner's share of costs and kind of the notification when oil and gas is put in a pooling order. And what the amendment does is you'll see, if you look at the page I handed out in white, page 2, you'll just see they changed it back to from operation to production, and that's just how that cost, who picks up the cost if there's a refusing owner in that actual term of when they start accounting for that amount. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think production is a good word to put in there. Operation means it can be running, but production means it's producing. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gillespie.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if they could explain. I'm trying to remember back on this one. It's been a while now, I guess. But the cost to develop an oil or gas well, and then it talks about notice of requirements for an owner's share of cost. Who are the owners on this? They talk about the owners of the lease to drill the well, or is it the owners of the land? I'm trying to figure this one out. Don't sound right to me.
Mr. Chair, I believe it's the owner or lessor of the mineral estate, the one trying to, okay, you know, conduct the operation, get the oil and gas producing. So, and then if you look on page 3 of the bill, that's really where it replaces, you know, there was a notice if somebody didn't want to participate, an owner, that notice had to go out 30 days prior to the spud date, and now the notice goes out and they have 30 days to respond. That's the substantive difference there.
Okay, so that, yeah, Mr. Chair, yeah, so that would be just to the either the oil or gas or whatever it happens to be, the owners of the lease that are doing the exploration work then. Okay, thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment? The question has been called. On the amendment, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lynch is aye by proxy.
Thank you. The amendment passes unanimous. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move HB 289 as once amended do pass. Do concur.
Thank you. Discussion, please. Senator Usher.
Mr. Chair, for Mr. Moore. I guess the question I have is why does it say HB 0289.2? I know we had two folders for 289, but this actually has a .2 on it.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's the second version of this bill. That's the blue, because it was amended in the House.
Because it was amended. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Further discussion?
Question.
The question has been called. All in favor of House Bill 289 as once amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Proxies, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch is aye by proxy.
Thank you. Motion passes. House Bill 289 passes unanimously. Senator Usher, would you like to carry this one for your House member? Hey, there's no I in team. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm here to serve.
You know, we could...
Mr. Chair, did we ever find out how we're going to resolve that SR 45, I think it is? It was supposed to have a different name on it?
No, we already took action, and then I turned the right paperwork in to have that second one scratched.
Okay.
Yep.
So we can get rid of that.
Yep.
Perfect. I just love coming to the committee. You just get more work.
We're going to do here.
We'll just stand at ease. It sounds like the House is still on the floor, so.
Did we already do SR 45?
We did. No, it's probably the second one.
They're on third reading, so.
Mr. Chair, should we move to table all these bills? They've been off the floor for 15 minutes. You've been off the floor for 15 minutes.
Representative Logie, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I have a pretty simple bill. This is House Bill 520. My name is Denley Logie, L-O-G-E, House District 14. That's the pretty part of the state, you know, way over where the mountains and a little bit of snow on the mountaintops. Anyway, what this bill is basically a study bill for EQC or if there would be another more appropriate committee, that would be up to the to you folks to decide. But it's a study bill. We have a lot of folks that have been moving in from elsewhere, and basically it's a pond study and a water study. What they're doing, they're coming in and putting in ponds, diverting streams. They don't realize that when they go to build a pond that they're supposed to have a pond permit. They don't realize that sometimes they're filling that pond with a pump from their well. Their water rights probably don't cover a pond. They're using probably more water than they should. The effects downstream can be actually if they fill the pond, overfill it, put fish in, you can have aquatic invasive species that go down into the streams down below. You could have fish get non-native fish get into if they plant them in their pond without the permit, without the proper fish. Those will get in the stream down below and contaminate the streams. And so basically what this bill is to try and do a water study to figure out what hazards are happening because of these ponds, illegal use of the pond, but also just any effect that of our water quality and the excessive use of the water. And so this bill, it's a study bill that would help preserve the good, clean waters of Montana. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents, please. Good afternoon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Eileen Rice, that's spelled R-Y-C-E, and I'm the Fisheries Division Administrator with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. I'm here today representing the director in support of House Bill 520 and thank the sponsor for bringing this important bill to you for consideration. Montana's world-class fisheries are rooted in a philosophy of wild fish management. In today's world, if we are not careful, our high-quality fisheries that rely on self-sustaining wild fish and high-quality aquatic habitat can be negatively impacted by private ponds stocked with fish for personal use. These ponds can pose significant risks to the aquatic resource and can be optimal environments for invasive species and fish pathogens. Additionally, the number of licensed in-state commercial hatcheries supplying fish for private pond stocking has declined steadily over the last decade, with four of the five currently permitted commercial facilities being under a limited quarantine due to invasive species and or fish pathogen detection. Applications for importing fish have increased fivefold because of limited in-state sources, increasing the risk of introducing species that could damage aquatic resources. Limited sources of affordable in-state fish is also suspected to have led to an increase in illegally stocked ponds from non-permitted out-of-state commercial hatcheries, in part due to easy access of fish through online supplies. Because of these risks, FWP, by law, operates a permit system that allows private pond owners to stock their ponds. To date, more than 10,000 pond permits have been issued, with about 200 permits issued annually. The permit review is complex and can be burdensome, so we work hard to avoid inconsistencies in administration across the state. Department costs for issuing private pond permits and managing issues associated with private ponds far outweighs the price of the permit at $10 for a 10-year permit or $10 annually for a commercial permit. Finally, frequent and severe drought years harm agriculture and fisheries, yet pond development continues. Evaporative loss from ponds can be significant, especially in southwest Montana, where drought-related impacts to agriculture and fishing are becoming more common. Additionally, ponds can encroach into sensitive areas and floodplains, particularly during runoff events, which further risks the introduction of novel species or pathogens into state waterways. For all of these reasons, the department encourages the passage of this bill to allow an interim study on impacts of private ponds to aquatic resources, including an examination of current policies and permitting protocols. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rice. Further proponents? Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Colin Cooney. That's COONEY, here today on behalf of Trout Unlimited. I think Dr. Rice said it all really well. I will just add, since 2017, which was my first session, we have worked on at least one fish pond bill, whether it's around permitting or water, aquatic invasive species. So I think using a study bill to kind of look at it holistically and potentially bring some legislation for next session to kind of touch on all of those instead of piecemeal is a good approach and something worth looking at. So we do support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Senators, my name is Mike Bias, B-I-A-S. I'm the Executive Director of the Fishing Outfitters Association of Montana. We represent over 1,100 professionally licensed fishing outfitters and guides across the state, and we're here in support of House Bill 520. Interestingly, I think, is I'm also an environmental consultant in aquatic resource management, and I've actually done several pond permits and designs and projects interacting with streams as well. We strongly support the wild fish management in Montana, that our high quality wild fisheries can be adversely affected through the impact of private ponds. Ponds can and have provided the introduction of AIS, aquatic invasive species, and pathogens, and could damage our aquatic resources. We're especially concerned with the interaction of ponds and surface water supply, as well as groundwater supply, and its adverse effects of warmer water temperatures from the ponds on surface water temperatures in the rivers. We urge your strong support of this important study bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents, please. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Chair Welborn, Senators, my name is Pat Clancy. It's C-L-A-N.
Sir, will you pull that microphone up closer to your, so we can.
My name is Pat Clancy. It's C-L-A-N-C-E-Y. I am speaking today on behalf of the Montana chapter of the American Fisheries Society. The American Fisheries Society was established in 1870 and is the largest and oldest science-based fisheries professional organization in the world. Despite the name, the membership is international. The Montana chapter was established in 1967 and represents over 200 fisheries professionals in the state, from state and federal agencies, universities, and the private sector. The chapter is an advocate for the conservation and restoration of aquatic organisms and for the protection and conservation of water and aquatic habitats. The Montana chapter of FS supports House Bill 520 and is able to lend technical expert support should the request be made. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Holly Franz. I'm testifying on behalf of the Senior Water Rights Coalition. We also support this bill. There are a number of water rights consideration with ponds. They're often unpermitted. There's happens to be a backhoe on the property when they're digging the foundation, so ponds often get dug, sometimes in the middle of a ditch. And so we support the idea of studying it. We would recommend, however, that it be assigned to WPIC, the Water Policy Interim Committee, as a more appropriate place for the study. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents? Further proponents? Are there any proponents online, Devlin?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Opponents in the room? Any opponents in the room? How about informational witnesses? Are there any informational witnesses online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Gillespie.
Mr. Chair, maybe for the sponsor.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. This one, I think, should be an easy one, but isn't going to affect our, we dig a little water pit, maybe 2 acre, 3 acre feet. It isn't going to affect all that kind of stuff, too, is it? We have to get permits and register
Mr. Chair,
and all.
Mr. Chair and Senator, it would depend on how that developed and what was there. If you went in and made it man-made, especially after the fact, you maybe needed a 310 permit or something like that. It's whatever is existing in place in law, you would still have to follow that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I understand that. I guess this seems like such a serious study, so I just was... I think this is more for fish ponds, so correct, and as I
Mr.
get
Chair
into it a little further.
Mr. Chair and Senator, this is basically for what's happening now with the influx of folks and those moving maybe from town out into the country. They don't realize there are some rules on building ponds. They don't understand some of their water right rules. They don't understand the negative impact on even the ranchers downstream if they're taking some of that water away from them, lowering the aquifers. And that's mainly what this is to get at those kinds, what's happening to our state and try and take care of if we need a little better system of letting people know what they're doing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Ms. Rice.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to hear that accent again, really. But Ms. Rice, it's been described in the presentations about the problems that we have with guys not getting permits, maybe putting fish in a pond, all kinds of things. So we've also heard that we have laws or permits that are supposed to be getting. So apparently that's not being enforced, and now we're asking WPIC to describe all this. If we can't enforce it, how are we going to, if nobody's going to enforce it, what good are we going to do?
Chair, members of the committee, Senator Lang. So to answer your question, enforcement does occur. And to explain a little bit more about how the process works is the... And to be clear to Senator Gillespie's question, when I talk about private ponds, I'm specifically talking about those permitted as a private pond, which means they have a permit to stock their pond with fish. So that's the official definition of a private pond permit that I'm referencing. So when the application comes in from the member of the public to get a private pond permit, our biologists go out, they review the pond, they check that the pond has legal water rights, and based on the conditions, the permit is issued contingent on a various degree of considerations. What we know is happening is we know ponds are getting illegally stocked without permits. Those we tend to hear about, either neighbors turning in neighbors or we'll find something downstream of a pond, then by statute we're allowed to go in and investigate, and our wardens take action. Our wardens do enforce ponds. The problem, and Representative Logie has alluded to this, is with the number of incoming new people to the state, there's the amount of pond development has been increasing steadily for decades. And it's getting to the point where we are keeping up with permitting, the availability of fish, and either the lack of knowledge of the permitting system or the time it takes for permitting is encouraging people to turn and look for other ways to get their pond and to put fish in the pond. So to answer your question, yes, we do enforce it, but a lot of our enforcement is after the illegal action has happened, which we don't know about until damage has occurred.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Usher.
Don't go too far. Mr. Chair, Ms. Rice, so you just explained the process. So to me, typically, fees, Department of Motor Vehicles, some other departments, charge basically what it costs. If we're sending a person out there, it costs more than $10. And I'm just wondering if it should be in the study that we should be looking at that fee. And so with you shaking your head, that's a yes to my question. So follow up would be, Ms. Rice, what's the fine for somebody not having a permit for one of the ponds?
Chair Wellborn, members of the committee, Senator Usher, the fine varies based on the action that's occurred, the county that it's in, and that our enforcement officers will issue the citation, the ticket, and then it's handled by the judge in that county who will, my understanding is they make determination on the fines. The cases where oftentimes the biggest financial issue is restitution. So we can charge someone with recovering costs, and that can be substantial rather than the actual amount of the fee. So by restitution, what, you know, the way it's worded is basically recovering it to where it was before the illegal importation occurred. So for instance, something that could happen is, and we had this case up in the Northwest several years ago when a pond was illegally imported from Idaho with fish infected with the whirling disease parasite that spread the parasite in the drainage, which impacted that fishery. So restitution could be impact to recovering that fishery.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Sales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess since Ms. Rice, you sat down, I'll let you rest and maybe the sponsor can have a shot at this. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you talked about agriculture and the harm and whatnot, and then the private ponds, which was a question, but Ms. Rice answered. I didn't realize that private ponds were related to the stocking and the fish side. But in that, does this cover the other ponds that you were talking about that maybe aren't being stocked but are still being implemented and dug, and the water right side of? Would this study still allow?
Mr. Chair and Senator, in my estimation, it should. And because I've seen in my area where people take a backhoe, they dig alongside the creek, all of a sudden they let water come in and then they let it go out, flow out again, and they maybe put some fish in between before it, the low end washes out. So it basically any pond, anything that's going to cause some of that degradation and actually needs to be studied, because a lot of those ponds are just not illegal, but I mean are not legal. They haven't gotten a permit even, but some people just don't know.
Okay, a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then, Representative, in reading the fiscal note, you know, down there, it does talk about potential contracted expertise relating to the water rights, and right, we all know that if there's going to be fish stocked in it, then there's probably should be a water right tied to it. But it seems, in what you just answered and the intent of how this is written, that it's going to allow us to look at ponds, all ponds, not just ones that are permitted through the fishing side. Would that...
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, I believe in it. And I think when it goes to whichever committee, that will, those instructions should be made by the committee how in-depth they want to get.
Okay, then if I could have a final. Thank you, Chair. And then, Representative, following up a little bit with the enforcement side that was brought up by Senator Usher, is that the intent also is, you know, when you look at private pond policies, including the permitting and protocols, would enforcement also be part that this study would look at?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the closing is here. That's the whole idea. I think whatever part of this needs to be worked on, I think enforcement comes up. The $10 permit, as the senator said, it doesn't even cost the cost of somebody going out there. And I think that's, you're getting at the heart of why this study is needed. We got to get at the use. We got to get at the illegal use. You got to get at the permitting, whether it needs an adjustment on the price. You got to get in on the law enforcement. Maybe there things need to be changed. Maybe they have to be a little more aggressive. And also along the same line, I believe the committee would come up with some other ways to help the situation, and to me part of that is coming up with some sort of an education scheme for the people that are coming into the area, coming into the state, and those that live here, just to let them know what is allowed and what is not allowed.
Thank you, Chair.
Further questions? No further questions. Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Chair, or Mr. Chair, Senator, or Representative Logie, are you, as part of this study, would you be willing to expand it to look at what the kind of best practices are in other states regarding pond permitting?
Mr. Chair and Senator, any avenue that needs to be looked into, I think that's the whole intent of the study is look any direction you really need to make sure we are protecting the streams, we're protecting the groundwater, we're protecting the surface water, and it never hurts to look at some other states and see what they're doing and if you can come up with better ideas. Yeah, that would be part of it. It's a study to cover all avenues.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Logie. I read the description in the bill about assessment of impacts. Is that going to include kind of a cumulative look, so to speak, by region? How many ponds, how many acres of ponds, assessment of impacts on the aquifers, assessment of impacts on senior water rights, how far is it going to go for $100,000?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I can't tell you how far it will go on the $100,000. And I think there again, when the committee gets a hold of it, how in-depth they want to get on each one of those items. But I think just talking about the enforcement and what is happening is the reason we at least need to take a look at it before we've it gets too far out of hand. But and maybe the enforcement is maybe the biggest thing to look at, and I'm not quite sure, you know, the exact where the dollars have to go. I think that's part of when you get into it. I do think you need to at least think about that, the assessment of the fee for sure, and the law enforcement.
Mr. Chair, a follow-up?
Follow-up.
First, a comment. I think I would really ask that the study include a description of the scale of the problem, because if we're going to arrive at practical and effective solutions to the, you know, all the ponds that are being built, I think we have to get an idea of what the scale of the problem is and the impacts. Otherwise, it doesn't get people's attention. So I hope we take it far enough that's kind of delivered in the end from the study. Can you tell me how you're planning to use the $100,000? Is that to hire or contract with hydrologists, or what's the plan there?
Mr. Chair and Senator, when you're looking at study bills, generally the study bill, part of that is to bring the experts in to the committee. Part of that, they figure on study bills. Part of that is just the mileage of the committee coming together for their meetings. So that'll be spread out through some of the other meetings that are being held by these interim committees. But I think when you need to actually probably have maybe a little bit of drone work in some areas, or checking the effects of an aquifer on some of the downstream water and how much it takes away, maybe when they're pumping into a pond, see what it does to the stream down below. So there's a little bit of field work that needs to be done as well, but a lot of it is you can bring the experts in and ask the questions, and like I say, part of that $100,000 is just for the committee coming in as well. When a study bill, that's always the way the fees go, and part of that is just for the committee itself to meet. Am I too vague for you, Senator?
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Logie, I've got one for you. I'm going to frame this. Where I'm coming from is more on the water quantity and quality, and I'll give you an example, like a wetland. And a lot of times people will, you know, dredge out a wetland, turn it into a pond, but it'll actually grow water, if you will. In other words, there's after a pond, sometimes there's more water that leaves the pond than what was leaving the wetland in a ditch before, just because of, you know, it growing plants or whatever it was doing. So I guess my question to you is, would you be amendable to this going to the Water Policy Interim Committee rather than EQC, just because it does talk a lot about water quantity and quality, and that's WPIC's charge?
Mr. Chair, and that was one of the things when I let in, I said if instead of EQC, if you thought it needed to go to another committee, that would be, I'd be very amenable to that, for sure.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had for a question. So you're welcome to close if nobody else has any.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and committee, I know water, any kind of study, when you come around with studies, there's a lot of people that don't like any studies to happen, thinking it's kind of a waste of money. But I think, like I say, what we're seeing sometimes with the water quality issues that are happening in Montana, and we're having the aquatic invasive species. We have the fisheries people are trying to stock ponds. They can't even find native fish, so they're finding any fish. And so somebody, kids get fish that pond, private pond, and then they put that down in the river. And I think a lot of this, like I say, is an education process that also needs to go out. It doesn't necessarily all have to be enforcement. But I think we have to kind of get a handle on what's going on. And I know probably in the eastern part of the state, you don't see the ponds and you don't see the harm from some of those ponds. But when you get down in the western part of the state where I am, and especially in the southwestern part of the state, the effects that it can have downstream and taken away, like say the water from the irrigation because they pump it into their pond and they have no regard for that. I think this is why at least get a handle on what's happening. And like I say, if we need to go into the research of whether we need a little different law enforcement, a little different laws, and I respect private property rights so much, but part of the thing, what happens when we have people coming in and they say, well, it's my land and I can dig and put a pond on it, but there are a few regulations already in place, and some of that education maybe needs to happen. So to me, this is part of the study is also for an education process. So I would ask for a green on this House Bill 520.
Thank you, Representative. And should this committee find a favorable passage of this, do you have a carrier in mind? Have you talked to anybody, or do you want us just to handle that in-house?
You can handle that in-house. I would ask Senator Lang, but I see his head's going this way so much today that I, that I won't ask.
Mr. Chair, I'd volunteer if he would get my bill off the table in his committee.
All right.
It is the season. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair and Senators, thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming in. Thank you. Hey, Jaslyn. Senator Flowers agreed to carry this whenever. You can write that down in case I forget when we do get around to executive action. Thank you. Looks like we have another sponsor on site. So, Representative Knutson, whenever you're ready, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Representative Rhonda Knutson from House District 34 in the beautiful northeastern corner of this state. The counties that I represent are Roosevelt County, Sheridan County, Daniels County, and Valley County, not Richland County, although I like them a lot. Today I bring to you a bill entitled House Bill Number 576, an act revising laws related to water and coal mining, revising the definition of material damage to include the effect of coal mining on the hydrologic balance, and providing rulemaking authority. Mr. Chair, every Montanan wants clean water. I want clean water. You want clean water. But we also want a working economy. The modifications that we're looking for in this bill to provide protections of existing modifications and future beneficial uses of water gradient from coal mines. It's like my teeth don't want to stay in my mouth right now. I'm sorry. While we're also providing clarity and certainty for two of our most important industries in eastern Montana, agriculture and mining. House Bill 576 clarifies the intent of the existing statutes governing water quality associated with coal mining activities in Montana. And it does this by aligning our statute with the federal regulations. If you have the bill in front of you, I'll walk you through what this bill does. Section 1, on page 1, provides direction to the DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality, to remove existing definitions in rule that are currently inconsistent with what the Office of Surface Mining, which is a part of the Department of Interior, which they have approved elsewhere at both the state and the federal level, and with the updates codified in this bill, HB 576. Section 2 on page, starts on the bottom of page 1. My copy has it all lined out. I hope yours does as well. Section 2 was originally intended to clarify that waters leaving a mine site that had TDS, or total dissolved solids, that had no effect on the beneficial use would constitute a non-significant activity due to the low potential for harm to human health or the environment. Part of the need for this section is the arbitrary water quality standard that exists for several of the drainages in eastern Montana. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Since the passage of House Bill 576 in the House, the Board of Environmental Review has provided direction to the DEQ to complete an analysis of the actual non-human background water quality and to establish water quality for those specific drainages that are affected by this bill. Based on that progress, and to avoid unnecessary engagement with the EPA on the proposed modifications to the Water Quality Act contained in Section 2, we'll be discussing an amendment. We just want to strike that whole section from the bill. With the direction given to DEQ from the remainder of this bill and from the BER, we are confident that we can accomplish the goals necessary to protect water quality down gradient of Montana coal mines while also permitting disturbance and inevitable short-term disturbances within the scientifically sound limits. If you look at new Section 2, it was called Section 3, but it starts on the middle of page 4. New Section 2 amends the definitions in the coal mine reclamation statutes. Existing statute provides a single definition for material damage, while three distinct definitions are used in other state and federal regulations. Beginning on page 8, line 25, and extending on to page 9, lines 1 through 11, we are amending the definition of material damage. These new definitions draw a distinction between the impacts on the hydrologic balance, the alluvial valley floor, and surface facilities related to the subsidence from underground mining. And now I have a handout that I'd like to show you. With your permission, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead. Thank you.
There is a spreadsheet in that packet, and if you'll just look at that briefly, I won't go through it. You've heard a lot of words today, and you're going to hear a lot more. But you'll notice on that spreadsheet, Montana's definition of material damage is now in alignment with the OSM standards, and that will provide greater clarity to recognize the context for which a determination of whether an impact amounts to material damage. And then also there's some photos in that handout as well. All right. As you consider this bill, there are a few things to keep in mind. First, coal mining is expected to have impacts on water quality and quantity. Our laws, as well as federal laws on which they're based, are intended to protect the downgradient water rights and uses. They're not intended to prohibit any impact. It's the department's job to analyze the impacts and make a determination on what level is scientifically sound and allowable under the law. If you look at page 3 of that handout that I gave you, you'll see some historic well monitoring data in an alluvial aquifer in eastern Montana. It's a chart, it's a graph with lines and dots on it. You'll see the well monitoring data demonstrate that historic pre-mine water quality bounces around. It's not a static number, but it generally stays within the same class of water. This represents the range or type of beneficial uses that the groundwater can support. A natural variation in water quality is due largely to weather events and other non-coal mine-related activities. Snow melt, rain, runoff will pick up silt and salt in this gravelly soil and will result in elevated levels of TDS, total total dissolved solids at various times throughout the season. And these are all completely unrelated to coal mining. I'd like to point out to you the very last thing on figure 2 on page 4 of that document. It illustrates that the pre-mining or background water quality to a tributary to the Tongue River by itself without any mining already exceeds the established water quality standard for that draining. There are a few things to keep in mind with the existing or the interpreted water quality standards. They were established 20 years ago in response to the perceived threat from coal bed methane development. These standards were not based on any measured background and were not intended to be a permanent fixture. These standards were just, let's get started, let's do something. Because of the directive from BER, as we discussed earlier, the Department of Environmental Quality will be establishing a standard based on actual measured background and sound science. Taken to its extreme, a mine discharge in this area would have to be treated to a state far cleaner than the natural background with the existing standards. This is practically impossible given the lack of point source discharge and the sheer acreage involved and the significant difference between the arbitrary standard and a measured quality water quality standard, Mr. Chair. Now I'd like to rest, and there's a few other people that have a few things to say about this, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Proponents.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Daryl James, that's D-A-R-R-Y-L. James is the common spelling. And I represent Westmoreland Mining, the owner-operator of the Rosebud Mine at Colstrip. Mr. Chair, I think the sponsor did a great job of outlining the intent of this bill. I just want to stress a couple of things. This really was born out of a number of conversations and conflicts with DEQ with regard to some MPDES permits for the Rosebud Mine. Most recently, just last year, DEQ issued a permit, an MPDES permit with that 500 decisiemen limit. If you look at the back of the DEQ memo, that red line, that was the extent of what would be allowable under that permit, knowing full well that the actual natural background well exceeded that limit. So what we were attempting to do with this bill is clarify in Section 2 that if we've got an ephemeral drainage and you can actually meet or improve the water quality within the existing water class, so you're not changing beneficial use, you're not changing the water class, as long as you can maintain that level, you should be good to go, even though we're in exceedance of that completely arbitrary 500 decisiemens. And it bears repeating what the sponsor said. That level was established under the Schweitzer administration for completely political reasons to try to squash coal bed methane development. It wasn't based on science. Wasn't based on any data collection whatsoever. It was an arbitrary level set. And just last month, the BER issued directive under a stipulation for DEQ in the next year to go out and collect all the data necessary and actually set a scientific water quality standard. So what this bill does, and I think because of that directive from BER, we can strike Section 2 from the bill. It's not necessary. We can accomplish what we need to within that new material damage definition. So all we're really doing there is saying until DEQ sets that scientific water quality standard, what we're going to say is if you're still within that water class, there we go. Again, if you look at the graphic on page 3, the sponsor talked about the fact that existing water quality bounces around dramatically based on time of year, weather events, that kind of thing. It is not a static level. And if you just consider that lowest level of lines in class 1, think of that as a future monitoring, right? You'd see variations. It doesn't move out of class 1. You see a couple towards the end of the line that exceed the class 1 limit. I'm not sure that DEQ would consider that to be a long-term permanent kind of an impact. It would be a violation of that standard, but it's not a long-term permanent. So that's all we're saying is you've got natural variation. As long as you're not blowing the lid out of it, it shouldn't be considered a water quality violation. But you do need to be able to stay within that class. And those classes are important because it does recognize the downstream uses of that water. So we want to make sure we're not impacting agricultural uses down gradient, any other neighboring uses, and I think this bill still provides that protection. I'm happy to go into any further detail and questions, but I think I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Further proponents? Good afternoon. Welcome.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. It's getting late in the day. I'm getting kind of slow. For the record, my name is Peggy Trenk, spelled T-R-E-N-K, and I'm here on behalf of the Treasure State Resources Association. As you know, we're a broad coalition of a lot of the natural resource industries, including coal, and we recognize the importance of the coal mining operations in Montana in producing energy and jobs. We rise in support of this bill as it's proposed to be amended by others offering testimony today. We trust this committee will consider those amendments and ensure that this bill works well for all affected mine operations. I think the key point to highlight that's already been made, but it simply makes sense to align Montana regulations with corresponding federal regulations since those are the driver, and we expect those will be approved by OSM and they don't go into effect until they are. The bill does catch us up with more realistic water quality regulations in that area. It's kind of hard to set regulations for background levels that don't exist. And for that reason, we ask for a due pass on this bill. I'd also like to add the support of Chris Puyer from Northwestern Energy on this bill. He couldn't be here for the hearing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Shelby DeMars, that is D-E-M-A-R-S, here today on behalf of the Montana Association of Oil, Gas, and Coal Counties. We rise in support of this bill. We think it's a common sense change in the statute that clarifies and while still providing protections for our water resources. So with that, we would encourage your support.
Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Harris, spelled H-A-R-R-I-S, and I'm the executive director to the Montana Coal Council, and we rise in support of House Bill 576 as well. We also encourage acceptance of a potential amendment, and that amendment specifically addresses underground mining and specific language would under that portion of the bill on page 9, line 8, I believe would say, under item C, it says, with respect to subsidence caused by an underground coal mining operation, the amended language potentially would say, except for instances in which the mining technology requires planned subsidence in a predictable and controlled manner. And with that clarification, that helps to helps us with one of our major producers. Signal Peak Energy is one of our major producers. In fact, Mr. Chairman, bearing with me for just a moment, a couple of statistics. Of the 28.2 million tons of coal that was produced in Montana last year, this particular mining is impacted. 7,431,000 tons came from this particular underground operation. 26% of that total tonnage was represented by this operation. Also, it accounts for 26% of the coal severance tax. As I've testified before many times at various committees throughout the session, $2.4 billion has come into the state revenues from our coal severance tax. And last year alone, $65 million came into the state coffers. Half of that goes into the general fund to fund a whole litany of state programs, which we're delighted to support and to help. And also the other half goes into the coal trust fund. The coal trust fund is now over $1 billion, and the interest alone is $15 to $16 million a year on that fund. This particular operation is about a quarter of all this production. So this is a significant amendment, and it's very important for our association for this particular operation. So we recognize also that this particular operation has paid $31 million in federal royalties, and half of those federal royalties come back to the state, and especially where there's school lands from those royalties. And also we'd like to recognize that of the 874 good-paying jobs from the coal industry, which greatly supports the state of Montana, we have a third of the nation's coal in this state. We represent over 20% of the grid. We have the national grid. With this in mind, we're talking about 235 employees and 800 of the 874 employees that we have. These are good-paying jobs. This is a very important amendment. It's a very important bill, and the Coal Council strongly supports it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Further proponents? Further proponents? Are there any online, Devlin?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any opponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Bring them into the room, please. Welcome. Mr. Hayes?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I am a proponent or opponent of this bill. I am, my name is Art Hayes Jr. I am a rancher and president of the Tongue River Water Users Association. I live at Bernie. My name is spelled H-A-Y-E-S. At the start of coal bed methane development in Montana, ranchers and farmers from the Tongue, the Powder, the Little Powder, and the Rosebud Creek petitioned the Board of Environmental Review for protective numeric standards for electrical conductivity and the sodium erase. Anyway, after several years of study by the top soil scientists in the United States, these standards were approved by Montana and the EPA. This bill does away with those standards. I must remind you that coal bed methane water came from the coal mains, the same as a coal mine. The standards were challenged by gas companies in both state court and Wyoming federal court. Montana Supreme Court ruled in a Northern Cheyenne case that the gas companies had to treat the water before putting it into the Tongue River. Coal companies could use the same reverse osmosis process to make the water pure and pipe it to the lake and cool strip, giving them a backup source of water that could be used. The pollutants in this water could be put into the ash pond that will certainly be a Superfund site someday. DEQ has the science and the case law to make these coal companies treat this water. But as always, the department has given in to political pressure to pass this special interest bill. Today, according to DEQ, we cannot meet the standards set by the BER. We are seeing damage to our soils and experiencing crop loss. The coal mine that mined coal on the banks of the Tongue River Reservoir is now bankrupt. Those high-paying jobs are gone. The coal bed methane industry vanished into the night, leaving millions of tons of salt on the land to wash down the ephemeral streams during snowmelt and heavy rains. Let Tongue River be an example for somebody what not to do to a river or a stream. I thank you for your time, and I'll be available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. Further opponents online? Mr. Charter.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Steve Charter, C-H-A-R-T-E-R, and I live and ranch in the Bull Mountains near Shepherd. I own and lease land inside and outside the permit boundary of an underground coal mine. Both the water and the land surface has been seriously damaged by subsidence cracking within the permit boundary, and the potential for water to be impacted outside the permit boundary is very real. House Bill 576 scraps concrete measurable criteria like, quote, violation of water quality standards, unquote, from the definition of material damage outside the permit area. Coal companies would no longer have to prove that mining activities will not dramatically impact water quality on property adjacent to mining operations for permit approval. The bill then adds an ambiguous open-ended language, such as that all water impacts outside of the permit boundary need to be, quote, significant, long-term, or permanent, unquote. Compared to ranchers like myself, who have spent our lives relying on our knowledge of local water resources for our livelihoods, DEQ personnel and coal companies have little understanding of what can constitute as significant or long-term damage to ranching operations. For example, when my water was damaged by mining activity, DEQ's stance has been that temporary water replacement can go on until final bond release, which could be decades down the road. The temporary water replacement DEQ required to mine to provide is only half of what my cattle need in hot weather, and the Class 1 water that has been diminished only now needs to be the minimum standard of what a cow would drink to survive. The performance and health of cattle drinking the lowest quality of water versus Class 1 water is very different. This performance difference is significant to my bottom line. I have had to reduce my stocking rate to accommodate for the lower quantity of water provided, also resulting in significant profit loss. Therefore, I worry that if House Bill 576 becomes law, it will require more ranching operations, including my own, to subsidize mining operations. Additionally, the retroactive nature of this bill is concerning. In a letter sent by the mine to my family this November, they acknowledged that part of the reason they intend to cancel our long-term leases and take our deeded land is because the cost of the reclamation work they are doing, quote, both within and outside active mining areas and permit boundaries, unquote. When coal mines came into our communities, the promise was that mining and agriculture could coexist, and if damages were done, they would be fixed. It is not fair that years down the road, the obligations that communities were promised can be weakened after companies are seeing the cost of mining. Most ranchers did not choose for coal mines to be on or adjacent to our private land, and ranchers and our communities deserve the reclamation we were promised. I respectfully ask the committee to vote no on this law as currently written, but we are open to amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents? Are there opponents in the room?
Do you want to take this? Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Clinton McRae. Last name is spelled M-C, capital R, little A, little E. And I'll ask the chairman permission to give written testimony to the secretary, if possible.
Please do.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Clint McRae. I'm a fourth-generation rancher from south of Colstrip. Our main headquarters are based on Rosebud Creek, which is about air miles, probably about 10 miles south of Colstrip. Water is the most valuable resource that we have in agriculture. Across the state, if you look at all the old established ranches, there's one common thread no matter where those ranches are, and that is they stuck around and were successful because of water, both quality and quantity. Those of us in southeastern Montana are no different. We're extremely lucky where we live. We have abundant water. The average well is 50 to 100 feet, 50 feet deep, and we don't have to have a lot of power to pump that water to the surface. We have 16 springs on our place. Every one of them comes out of a coal seam. And the reason being is the coal seams are the most porous layer under the ground, and the water infiltrates down through the soil, hits that coal seam and laterals. Almost always underneath that coal seam is a heavy layer of clay, which keeps it from sinking down anymore. This is why there's so much conflict between coal mining and water quality with agriculture in that area. The coal seams are our aquifers. They are our water source. When the reclamation takes place, the soil is taken out of the ground by color and type and separated, and when it's reclaimed, it goes back into the same order. So what was on top, once on top of the coal, now goes where the coal is, and there's issues with that in some places. Water contamination problems and water flow problems that do impact agriculture. There is a concern that I have, and I'd like to, I'm in the interest of time, I'd maybe cover this if I'm asked about it later on, but I'd like to cover some issues on the Area F mine permit on West Fork of Armels Creek, west of Colstrip. This is significant and has merit to what we're talking about here today. We have had water protection laws in place through the Surface Mine Reclamation Act and other state laws for 50 years. We have had mining and agriculture down there side by side coexisting for that long. I am the second generation that's been involved in these issues. I want to be extremely clear. We do not, adjacent landowners do not oppose coal mining. We're pro-agriculture. We aren't anti-coal. But this bill wreaks havoc with that. Our federal and state reclamation laws are protective enough for those of us in the agricultural world. Those laws require pre-mining water quality standards for groundwater and surface water for both quality and quantity. The mine permit areas in these adjacent agricultural lands are protected by this. This analysis of water quality and quantity ensures the protection of agricultural water rights and that they remain intact. This law and this process protects agriculture, allows mining and agriculture, mining and ag to coexist. It also upholds property rights, specifically covered under the DNRC. We have to apply for these water rights and we hold them very, very dear. Under current law right now, the company must demonstrate that they will not violate water quality standards. House Bill 576 would remove this requirement. House Bill 576 changes fair and reasonable protection that's existed for 50 years. We don't see a problem with this. It is not needed. It is hostile to agricultural interests in coal country and should not move forward. We are not asking, in closing, for anything more than we have now. We're asking for the status quo, and that is extremely important. We want to keep the status quo on the water quality and quantity that we have now. We believe that the existing law is reasonable, it's fair, it works, it's been in place for multiple years. Private property rights, which I'm a strong proponent of, in my opinion, are being violated by laws like this, and we ask you to please vote no on 572, at least the way it is written. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCray. Other opponents in the room? Good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Pat Teely. That's T as in Tom, H-I-E-L-E. And I have land in the Bull Mountains immediately adjacent to the underground mine there. I am also the chair of the Bull Mountain Land Alliance, and I represent about 40 households in that area. I would like permission to pass out this letter from a lot of those people.
Please, go ahead.
I came today to speak in opposition to House Bill 576. Our current reclamation laws were carefully crafted over some 50 years with the hard work of many early members of Bull Mountain Land Alliance. to prevent the kind of degradation mining inflicted on Montana in the past prior to those laws. These laws have made it possible for mining operations and ranchers and property owners to coexist for decades. We see no reason why they should be changed. I live and run cattle within a mile of the permit boundary of that underground mine. I believe, and my members believe, that House Bill 576 would amend the law to remove reference to water quality standards and insert ambiguous language like significant and long-term or permanent damage. What exactly constitutes significant damage to my domestic well or my neighbor's spring? Is it when the total dissolved solids increase by a factor of 10? How will we determine when water is no longer suitable for irrigation, livestock, or wildlife without water quality standards? And is long-term measured in days, weeks, months, or years? As Steve Charter just pointed out, some of his springs and his well have been damaged for several years and not repaired. This ambiguity will only lead to litigation, which is an unfair burden to put on landowners and ranchers. In our experience, any ambiguity in language has led to conflict between all parties. As a landowner, I just ask that Coal Mine keeps its promise that made when seeking a permit, that there would be no impacts to the water outside of the permit boundary. If it is burdensome for a coal company to keep this promise, that is the cost of mining. If enacted, House Bill 576 will signal a U-turn in Montana's constitutional right to secure the clean and healthful environment mandated by Article 9 of the state constitution. I call on you to protect landowners and maintain the wording and intent of the original law. I ask you to vote no on 576. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents in the room? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tom Baratta, B-A-R-A-T-T-A. I live in the Bull Mountains near Roundup, Montana. Excuse me. I live just a mile outside of a mine permit boundary. House Bill 576 is a dangerous bill that has dire consequences for myself, my neighbors, and all Montanans that live near an active coal mine operation. My neighbors and I would lose the ability to effectively protect our water and land rights from nearby coal mining operations. House Bill 576 would redefine material damage and create ambiguous language in how, when, or if our water sources would be replaced. This is extremely irresponsible legislation for all citizens of Montana. Monitoring data and observation by landowners and residents indicate that virtually all of the important water sources used by cattle and wildlife that have been undermined by my coal mine neighbor have been damaged. Mining is getting closer to the more densely populated areas of the Bull Mountains and to my home and my water. The mine has never had a full and complete environmental impact statement that truly examines how the mine could affect the water. While an EIS is finally being developed, which was found to be required by law prior to permit being granted, it will still take a few years to complete. In the meantime, the mine will keep making its way closer to mine and to my neighbor's water sources. Given the uncertainty of the impacts outside of the permit boundary, we cannot afford company obligations to be further weakened. We simply want mining operations to provide assurance that they will not cause damage to any water sources outside the boundary and then be held accountable to reclaim and restore the damage done by their operations. Passage of this bill would allow out-of-state mine operations the freedom to damage and destroy our natural resources, possibly forcing hardworking farmers, ranchers, and landowners off their land and then take the money and run. Is this what you want for your state, for your friends and family? It seems to me that if you damage it, you should be responsible to fix it. You have the opportunity to protect and preserve our natural resources and tell big mining companies to leave Montana like you found it. Please do not allow these operations to act irresponsibly and recklessly in how they treat the people and the lands of Montana. Please defend the rights and properties of hardworking Montanans and vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Other opponents, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Derf Johnson. That's spelled D-E-R-F-J-O-H-N-S-O-N. And I represent the Montana Environmental Information Center. And we are very concerned about this bill. In particular, we are concerned about the striking of the language regarding water quality standards from the definition of material damage. I would just ask for you to read that definition very carefully, with that language and without that language, because that provides an easily understandable, easily monitored, and easily enforced definition by which we can protect water quality in a lot of these impacted areas. Without that information, it becomes much more arbitrary and difficult to understand the law and the impacts associated with potential mining. And that really is what it comes down to. Additionally, we have some concerns with some of the other changes to material damage, more specifically the addition of this having to be a long-term significant degradation. I would question the language there. What's significant and what's long-term? Is it 1,000 years? Is it 10,000 years? What we have currently works. There's no need to fix what's not broken. I would encourage you to vote against this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jasmine Krotkov. That's spelled K-R-O-T-K-O-V, and I come to you from the Montana Farmers Union. Montana Farmers Union supports the mining of Montana coal with proper regulations. Our members also say in their policy statement that they also support feasible air, water, and land use standards to prevent degradation of our environment and the quality of life for present and future generations. House Bill 576 punches holes in the standards that currently work towards that goal of proper regulation and preventing degradation of the environment. The bill changes the definition of degradation to water quality to include the terms serious, long-term, and permanent. And farmers and ranchers know that disrupting the hydrological cycle or degrading water quality often has serious, long-term, and permanent effects, even when they're not anticipated and not immediately recognizable. The bill also restricts our rights as neighbors to coal mines to voice concerns about material damage that no one predicted. For these reasons, we recommend a do not pass on House Bill 576. Thank you.
Thank you. And welcome. You may have to push that. People get excited when they leave and hit that.
Thank you. Yeah. Chairman, members of the committee, Amy Seaman here on behalf of Montana Audubon, S-E-A-M-A-N. You've heard a lot of great testimony and reasons why we oppose this bill, and so I just wanted to offer one thought that we've had during the hearing, and it's really just about why we have the water quality standards, and they are there to protect human health and, of course, our aquatic resources. So whether they are there from a natural source or something that we're adding as an anthropogenic source, I think in some cases it may not, you know, we're saying if it matters where it comes from, it doesn't really. The water quality standard is there to protect our health into the future, as you've heard. And we think this bill, as you've heard, does change the balance of fairness when it comes to balancing short-term profit gains with the long-term needs that we have for quantity and quality of clean water. So with that and the other reasons that you've heard for opposition, we would urge a no vote as the bill is written right now. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Other opponents? Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Charles Deneau, D-E-N-O-W-H, here on behalf of the Signal Peak Mine. Signal Peak is the only underground coal mine in Montana. We largely support this bill, but we do have issue with one small part of the definitions that we've got an amendment to address. This is the definition of material damage, which is at the bottom of, at least in my bill, page 8. Continues on to page 9, and specifically we're concerned about the little c on page 9, line 7. The current bill says material damage means with respect to subsidence caused by an underground coal mining operation. Our amendment would add to the end of that, except for instances in which the mining technology requires planned subsidence in a predictable and controlled manner. Mr. Chairman, the term subsidence refers to the downward vertical movement of the Earth's surface or settling, and there are instances in underground mining where planned subsidence is necessary. The definition in the bill as it stands would prevent us from doing that, but the amendment would solve that problem, and with its adoption, we would fully support the bill. We put this language together in consultation with the other proponent stakeholders, and this language matches existing OSM regulations. And to clarify, I know you've got a few amendments there. The one I'm referring to is 001.003. And in summation, with its adoption, we would be a proponent to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents in the room? Do we have any information in the room? I started the day in committee seeing you. Welcome at the end of the day.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Committee, Sonia Nowakowski, S-O-N-J-A-N-O-W-A-K-O-W-S-K-I. I'm the Division Administrator for Air, Energy, and Mining at the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm joined today by Mining Bureau Chief Dan Walsh, and we are available for questions if they're hard. Ask Dan. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, Devlin online, do we have any?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, we'll start with questions. Senator Gillespie.
Mr. Chair, maybe for Daryl James.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gillespie.
Yeah, I think better in terms of parts per million. So I'm just wondering, these charts we have on this handout here from DEQ, I'm assuming most all these values that are in there equate to parts per million. And we're talking, are they all related to total dissolved solids, or I'm assuming they are. Just wanted to clarify that before I went on.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gillespie, I think that you can consider electric conductivity, EC, SAR, and TDS kind of synonymous. And I don't know that those are parts per million or decisiemens. Is it? I think it's decisiemens. And don't ask me to convert that or explain that. Or I'll have to re-refer it.
I think they might convert over on a one-to-one basis, but I'm not positive of that either. So my memory's failing me at the moment. But follow-up, I guess, Mr. Chair?
You bet.
I guess I grew up in the Kievan Sunburst oil fields, and I think the sponsor had it right at the start, was that we love our extra income that comes from whether it's oil, gas, coal, I don't care, but it does have to work with agriculture too. And I've been exposed to a lot of water that don't work with agriculture. So I guess I'm
very nervous about just giving up. Now, maybe the maybe I'll refer to somebody else, but maybe with the amendments that are proposed, maybe they will take care of it. I don't know if you've had a look at that or not.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gillespie, I think, let me try to answer your first question about whether this even amounts to a significant change in the law. What we're really talking about, and if you go back to that DEQ memo, I want to refer you to page 3, that top graphic there. What this law really gets at is saying what we are interested in eliminating is this notion that there's one water quality standard, that 500 decisiemen limit. These classes of water are based on beneficial uses, okay? So what we're saying is if you're in a class 2 water, that well monitoring data during mining, post-mining, is going to fluctuate based on rain events, runoff, agricultural activity, and mining activity. All we're saying is if that is class 2 water pre-mining, it has to be maintained as class 2 water post-mining. So there is no change in the beneficial use. Cattle can still be watered. Crops can still be irrigated with that class 2 water. Nothing changes. If we blow out of that into a class 3 water, that's a violation. And the mine should not be permitted for that. We get at this through modeling. And all the modeling at Westmoreland demonstrates that we would not change the water class. What we can't do is meet that 500 decisiemen water quality standard, right? So in the immediate term, we need to be able to say, we're going to have fluctuation. We can demonstrate that we won't change the class. We won't change the beneficial use. We won't affect the agricultural activities, the cattle operations with our mining activity. But we cannot meet that 500 decisiemen because the existing background, the non-anthropogenic background water quality already exceeds that. We can't bring it back down that low. And I've already forgotten the last half of your question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, follow up, I guess. I'm with you there. I know we can push the envelope a little bit on some of this stuff. Sometimes we have to buy extra expensive minerals to counter the effect of too much sulfates, too much TDS, that type thing. But I guess what I'm concerned about is if we elevate ourselves far enough above that level, I mean, a little bit of increase I'm not worried about, but a big increase I am, and it's easy enough to get a big increase with some of these waters that come from underground. So I guess I can fully sympathize with the ones that are saying, my water's not fit for my cows to drink. So I think we do have to, are we going to be protected there, I guess, if we have elevated water levels way above these lines, then we definitely need to do something, I would say.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gillespie, absolutely. And I'm totally sympathetic to what the landowners are talking about as well. And as I said, if there is a change, if that applicant can't demonstrate through their water quality modeling that they can't maintain that water class, that they can't maintain that, then they don't get permitted. We cannot blow over that limit, okay, yeah, within that beneficial use. And if I may, you asked something about amendments. I just remembered it.
Sure.
If I can speak to the intent of the bill
Mr.
again.
Mr. Chair, I guess we're okay.
Yep, go ahead.
If you look at this page that the sponsor handed out, that's got the side-by-side comparison of language, what we're really trying to do with this bill is completely mirror what is already in OSM. It's been adopted in Wyoming, or it's in the federal regs already. So we're taking those definitions and putting those in Montana code. Part of the reason for that is making sure that we don't do something here that, I mean, it's taking years for OSM to approve any kind of changes in the program. So what we want to do is adopt something that we know has already been approved, so we're almost guaranteed that they're going to approve it in Montana. We don't want to be 5 years down the road and have permits issued and then OSM go, nope, you blew it. So that's why the language that we have is so critically important. So the language that the landowners are concerned about, and I get it, about removing the water quality standard and putting in what they feel is vague language, is already OSM-approved language on long-term and permanent impacts. I want to make sure that you read this in its entirety, though. If you look at the bottom of page 8, it talks about significant long-term permanent degradation, and I'm going to skip ahead, to those land uses or beneficial uses of water. It's in this code, in this amended bill, to say We cannot degrade water quality to the extent that it impacts water uses or water rights. I think it's very clear that it remains protected. Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Maybe a referral to somebody else, or I can let somebody else chime in, and I'll step back in a little later, maybe.
Okay, if you want to re-refer real quick your question while it's still...
Mr. Chair. Chuck Donnell, please. He's still... Oh, he left. Maybe Mr. Johnson?
Yep. Mr. Johnson, you're the lucky winner.
That's your day. Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Johnson, I don't know if you know what Mr. Donnell was possible amendments. I don't know if you were aware of them or if you had any thoughts on that. Enough to comment on it, whether that would really give us the protection we need or not.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gillespie, I just read the amendment, and to me, the way that I think about that particular amendment is, why have material damage definition at all if a company can say that, well, we planned for this? It's part of our normal operation. It seems like it's a loophole that you could drive a Mack truck through, as far as I'm concerned. That's a pretty problematic amendment. In terms of the water quality standards that have been established along the Tongue, my question is, if there's every intention of complying with water quality standards, then why remove the requirement that you comply with water quality standards? If there's an issue that they have with the standards that have been set on the Tongue, that there's a forum, and it sounds like they are already pursuing issues there in terms of the BER and whether or not the natural background should play a role. But why remove this protective standard on this end of things?
Thank you.
That answers your question, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And now, Senator Curdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for Mr. James.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Curdy.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. James, so this new amendment concerning subsidence and the whole question of how it applies to material damage has now become a question. So my question to you is in regard to this amendment dealing with subsidence, is there anything we should else consider? Something else we should consider?
Not sure I understand okay. The question, Mr. Chair.
I'll come back to this. Okay. Just a second.
Okay. Other, yep. We'll go with Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for Ms. Nowakowski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nowakowski. So look, going back to page 8 that several folks have referenced here, with the striking of violation of or water quality standards are violated, violation of a water quality standard, whether or not existing water use is affected as material damage. Does that mean that if DEQ approves a mine expansion that may violate water quality standards if that's no longer in the law as a definition of material damage?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers, so I think it's important here to distinguish a couple different things that have been raised in this discussion. When we're talking about standards, this is a number. We have groundwater classes, and that is strictly based on a standard or a number. We have surface water classes, and those are geographic areas like the Tongue River. And so in this instance, when you're striking a water quality standard, essentially the change you're making is it takes away that, for example, if a proposed mine expansion in your example is going to increase that from 500 to 500.001. That's material damage. That can't occur because of that water quality standard. What the change in the bill makes by striking that language, we still have to look at the beneficial use. So we would run more baseline, we would have to have more modeling in place to basically ensure that that change to 500.001%, that change, that that doesn't affect the beneficial use. For example, that the black leeches in these areas, streams, are still able to survive, that the cows are still able to drink from those streams. So this circles it back to the beneficial use and making sure, as opposed to a standard, which is set below natural occurring, basically standard, a standard that is below what is achievable, it takes it back to the beneficial use. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up?
Yep, go ahead.
Moving above in that same, on page 8 into A, the language that's inserted now is significant long-term or permanent degradation, and having some experience trying to identify what significance means in all kinds of different applications, natural resource applications, how would you define significant long-term? Permanent makes a little more sense to me, but significant long-term I think is somewhat ambiguous.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers, I didn't bring my table with me, but that is an incorporation of the OSM language or the Wyoming language. I'm not sure which. There, Daryl has the table. So that is an incorporation of the terms that are already in statute that we would be using for that to make those determinations. We would be taking a look at that and using that to make a determination about long-term or permanent, excuse me, or significant. And I can provide you with this table if you would like, Senator Flowers. I can provide it to the Secretary.
Please do. One more question.
Go ahead.
Thank you. This is for Clint McRae.
Senator Flowers, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. McRae, I think we've heard through testimony here that coal mining adjacent to agriculture is a delicate balance between allowing coal mining without undue impacts on agriculture. And what I heard you and some of your neighbors talk about is that this proposal would create undue impacts. Could you kind of expound on why you think this change from what we've been doing and seems to have been working for a long time to what's being proposed, which in my mind appears more ambiguous, how would you, what's your assessment of what lies ahead for you given this change?
Let me give you an example of a mine permit expansion west of Colstrip, and this is what they call Area F. It's in the West Fork of Armels Creek, north and a little bit west of Colstrip. I don't remember the year, but it was around, I believe, approximately 2010, where the hearing in Colstrip was on this permit. I testified at that hearing with the same testimony that I gave today. Federal law says in order for this mine permit to go forward, they have to do meaningful water quality standards on groundwater and surface water quality and quantity. And I was very specific that said we were not, we being the adjacent landowners of the area, the landowners would not oppose this permit if that was done. They looked at that permit in front of the Office of Surface Mining and the DEQ. They applied for it, did the environmental impact statement on it, but did not do any water quality analysis on groundwater or surface water or anything like that, which was wrong. The second thing that happened is the Office of Surface Mining granted the permit minus that. And so the only option that we had as the public and the landowners is to go to federal court and challenge it. And we won. And they remanded back to the court that you have got to go do your due diligence. I think the issue here is we assume that there's a law in place that is going to be enforced, and it wasn't. And the problem is, if the state and the federal agencies don't enforce the law, I don't think it's right to put the pressure on a landowner to go to court to defend himself when the state and federal agencies doesn't have the guts to enforce the law. In essence, what happens is the courts wind up being the regulating agency, which is not right. So to answer your question, that's one example, and I'll give another. Don Bailey was a neighbor of ours up the creek. Peabody Coal Mine had an illegal discharge down Lee Cooley. This was several miles down the creek. He didn't know this was happening until he went into the hay meadows with his swather, and he buried that thing all the way to the frame. Peabody had been discharging water down an ephemeral stream for months and soured that ground and, of course, got his swather stuck. He sued the DEQ and won to the tune of six figures. We should not have to sue to keep this from happening. But we did. And if I'm afraid that if 576 passes, this would take that opportunity away from us, heaven forbid, and what would we do? You know, I'm not going to stand up here and saying I'm opposed to coal development, but we do, if it's going to happen, we do expect and I think deserve some protection to keep the status quo.
Thank you. Staying on that side, Mr. No? Okay, we'll go back to Senator Curdy.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Mr. James. Now, I'll get it straight here. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Curdy.
Do you agree with this amendment being added to this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Curdy.
Or should we have other language?
Mr. Chair, Senator Curdy, you know, I tried to explain what we were attempting to do is make sure that we would adopt OSM language that we can almost guarantee approval. The amendment is not in the definition of subsidence for material damage for subsidence in either OSM regs or in neighboring states. It does cause me a little bit of concern, but we've got severability clauses in the bill. So I don't know that I'm going to get too excited about it. But what I would say is it doesn't mirror the OSM language that we were trying to adopt. Does that answer your question?
For the time being. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. James, if you would stay. Excuse me.
Mr.
I just have some questions, and it's in the same, I guess, part of the bill. I think Sonia did a good job of explaining beneficial use of water being adversely affected, land use being adversely affected, and then also next line, it says or water rights impacted. Could you explain to me what or water rights being impacted would be?
Mr. Chairman, you know, frankly, that's a part of existing code that I thought we should leave in because of the concerns that you hear from landowners. That's something that's not in OSM, but I felt was important enough in Montana to say we want to make sure that if there are existing water rights that are impacted, we think that should be protected. More than just the beneficial use, but a water right. Because I've heard stories, not with regard to Westmoreland, but with other mines. Mr. Charter was one that testified on the House side of having lost water because of mining activity. I think that's already covered in statute elsewhere, but I think to reiterate it here is important enough to say that's a material damage. If you affect a water right, that should be a material damage as much as affecting the water quality.
And I guess if I could, a clarification. So what I'm hearing you say is not so much the beneficial use, but in any way that water right is impacted, you feel then that would merit the material damage.
Mr. Chair,
that's quite a statement, so I just want to make sure that that's what you mean.
Mr. Chairman, it's not just what I mean. I think that's clearly what it says. It's material damage would be an effect on land use, the beneficial use, which is the water quality, or the water right.
Thank you. And then if we could go just a couple lines further, if you'll hang with me.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you. And reading what Wyoming has done and also what you're saying OSM has approved, I'm just curious when I read support sub-irrigation or flood irrigation agricultural activities, and then when I read further down, alluvial valley floor to support farming. So are we going to leave it in existing where it's sub-irrigation and flood irrigation versus irrigation and farming of today's practices that may not be sub-irrigated or flood irrigated?
Mr. Chairman, I think this is a different type of water use is what it's getting at. So you have three different uses, right? The first one under sub-A, that's basically a surface water right. Right? B, the alluvial valley floor, that's a subsurface right. A subsurface water quality, and then you've got subsidence. Maybe I'm misunderstanding your question.
I didn't phrase it good. So, and I'm sorry, I'll try to do it again. Basically, it's tied to sub-irrigation, mm-hmm. which is a type, and flood irrigation, okay?
Right.
For ag activities. Okay, and then on the handout, the sheet that you gave us,
yep.
if you go down to what OSM 701.5, it actually says alluvial valley floor to support farming. So getting back to that beneficial use of water that we talked about, maybe I have a well and I'm pumping, mm-hmm. and I'm not pumping it to flood irrigate or sub irrigate. So to me, it's two different avenues that you've got, one in your proposed bill and then one that's listed in the sheet that you gave us. Does that help?
Maybe. Mr. Chairman, let me look at it. I think what you're seeing in CFR, it says, would significantly decrease the capability of the alluvial valley floor to support farming. I think our language mirrors more what was in rule and is more closely related to what OSM approved in Wyoming. It says, to support sub-irrigation or flood irrigation for agricultural activities. You're seeing a significant difference in that terminology?
I guess my question is, am I limited to just those two practices of irrigation, sub-irrigation and flood irrigation, and
I got you.
That's the only ones that you're concerning?
No, I think, Mr. Chairman, that that's only related to the use of that water from the alluvial valley floor.
I guess I am, Mr. Chair. So would you be open then to, do you see where I'm going, where it seems limited in those practices that you've put in the new rule, which will be statute, versus other uses of that water that may be pumped through pipes and not tied to just the sub-irrigation flood? Or am I missing this completely?
I think so, Mr. Chair, but maybe we could talk offline after the hearing, or I don't know if DEQ's got another view on this, but I think we can weed that out.
Okay. No, and I could be completely going down a whole different track. So I'll let others, if we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No other questions yet? No? Over here? Good.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Vice Lane. Chair. For Mr. Thiel.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lang.
Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Thiel, do you or your neighbors, have you taken water samples of your surface water, your well water, all that? Do you have data in regard to that right now?
I don't have very much. We started that policy just before winter. So we have one sample to start with. We're going to continue that quarterly as the mine approaches our property. What we have done so far is encouraged all the property owners to get a water quality test, and many have done so. And we have tested the static water level in a large number of the wells, but not all.
Okay, thank you. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? All right, not seeing any. Are you ready to close on your bill? I'm betting you are.
I bet I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The purpose of this bill, let's not go down the wrong road. The purpose of this bill is not to allow degradation of the water quality in any area or in, by any fashion. The purpose of this bill is simply to bring the existing statutes governing water quality associated with coal mining into alignment with other statutes and federal regulations. And a thing that I did not have prior to talking about this bill in the House was the director from BER that was given to DEQ, and we always talk the alphabet soup here, to determine water quality specific to those areas rather than using a drainage or a larger drainage area. We're going to have, rather than a generic water quality standard for coal mining, we're going to say, DEQ, you've got to determine a standard for each of those drainages, each of those areas. That's far better than what we've got now. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to close and say thank you. Do pass on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for visiting the Senate. This closes, I guess it'd be House Bill 576. And we'll move into recess until we have a sponsor. Thank you.
Alrighty, I'll call Natural Resources back to order. Give everybody a second to thank you. Welcome back, and welcome, Representative Perry. It's nice to have you here this afternoon.
Top of the afternoon to you, Chair and Committee. My name is Gary Perry, spelled P-A-R-R-Y. I represent House District 39. I do have to apologize because I really wasn't aware I was even going to be here this afternoon, and so I had two bills and got... Anyway, I am sorry that I didn't come sooner. What I have before you today is House Bill 656, and it's a simple bill to provide some clarification to the Montana DEQ and permit holders on what constitutes a major or minor revision to an existing coal mine permit. Basically, what this comes down to is if a mine has an area that's, you got to kind of watch, guys. Got an area that's permitted here and another that's permitted here, and they're two separate permits. If they want to put a road over here to support this, they can't do that. You have to stay within. So all this is doing is saying if there are minor revisions that don't affect the final reclamation, that don't affect any of the water, anything going off the mine, if there are minor revisions that are within the mine that are utilized for the mine only, that we can do that without having to go for a whole new permit. Because if you want to put that road over there now, you actually have to file a whole new permit because now you've gone into the other area and it's not part of this permit area. So it simplifies things. It keeps the mining companies from having to put a lot of extra effort out in order to just move a road or move a pile. But it also reduces a lot of unnecessary work for the Department of Environmental Quality as they're analyzing it. So in a way, it's kind of a red tape initiative, only as long as when this was first introduced on the House, we had a thing here that so you could go within 320 acres off of the current mine permit. Fortunately, that's not in there anymore because I couldn't support that either. All of this is within the current mining areas only. Okay? So I'll try to read some of this now. I know you hate that. A significant change in the post-mining drainage can't happen. A significant change in post-mining land use, and if you're not really familiar with it, pre-mine you have to do, you have to get all your original topography. You have to make sure that when you're done with mining, you've got the approximate original contours that you had before you started mining. So this wouldn't change any of that. It maintains that. It won't realize a significant change in bonding because you're not doing a major change in what's going on in the mine. It'd be a very minor change. A change that may affect the reclaimability of the area or the hydrologic balance in the area. Again, for the most part, this is things like moving a pile over here or changing a road, or you know, it's allowing for ease of operation within the mine without changing anything significant to the mine. So the current definition for minor revision is anything, it's going to be sound really silly, anything that's not major. The kind of ambiguity sets a stage for uncertainty for the mining industry, and it's an open door for litigation against the state when the department exercises their discretion in applying this to a broad definition. So House Bill 656 provides much clearer legislative intent on when the DEQ is to apply the standards and procedures for review of a major or minor revision to an existing permit. And I can walk you through the bill if you'd like. Up to you guys. You want me to walk you through? Okay, I'm going to. We'll start with Section 2 on page 6 of the bill. On lines 20 through 24, we provide a new definition for major revisions. The language closely follows what appears in rule, but qualifies that a major revision entails significant changes and adverse effects from the revised plan. Now flip to page 7. Line 11 of the bill, and you'll find a more detailed definition of minor revision. This explains that you can add up to a half section, which is 320 acres, of additional mining disturbance within the mine boundary, and you can cross adjacent permitted boundaries with mining activities so long as neither of those events results in a significant change in what was already contemplated in the environmental analysis conducted for the original permit or permits. Okay, pretty simple. The language originally drafted here was a little more confusing, so we amended that to make it clear that a minor revision or series of minor revisions could not exceed 320 acres. So how does the department determine whether these activities will result in significant change? Let's go to section 1 on page 1 of the bill. This outlines the data and analysis required of the applicant to demonstrate, one, that the reclamation can still be achieved. We certainly don't want to change that. That the new impacts are insignificant relative to the overall mine operation. That the change does not create significant impacts beyond those already analyzed and disclosed in previous environmental analysis, and that there is adequate bonding in place to cover the changes in impacts. I'm going to deviate just for a second. The great thing about, I think, at least the Westmoreland mine, and I hope the rest of them are the same way, is everybody's finally realized it does no good to fight with each other. And so what's developed over many years is more of a collaborative approach. And so what would happen in this regard is the people at the mine would contact the folks at DEQ and say, this is what we're thinking. And then they'd get together and look at it and say, that either looks okay or it doesn't look okay, or it's significant or it's insignificant. So finally, during the testimony in House Natural Resources, a request was made to include notice for an affected landowner, and we all agreed to that amendment. It was a good addition to this bill. To close the loop, let's go to page 2, lines 25 through 28 of the bill. This provides a statutory definition of amendment to clarify that an amendment is still necessary for any expansion of the permit boundaries. Okay, I want to make sure we understand that. If you're going outside of the boundaries, you have to file for an amendment, okay? Just like in federal regulations, and explicitly excludes minor revisions and incidental boundary revisions. Page 5, line 27, clearly defines incidental boundary revisions, and that definition was lifted from the federal regulations. So there's no real change in application of either state or federal regulation. So you'll see language that was stricken on page 2, lines 26 and 27. That was a simple drafting error. I think that's what I was talking about before. And lastly, section 4 on page 12 of the bill provides instructions to the applicant on how to file for an amendment. Then sections 5 and 6 provide administrative direction. These changes must ultimately be approved by the OSM, Office of Surface Mining. But given that the language is consistent with federal code and that Montana still provides greater distinction than neighboring states, we have little concern for their approval. Not that we're disregarding their approval, we're just not worried that we won't get it. Again, this is a simple bill that provides more clarity without changing any environmental protections already in place. And I'll step aside and welcome proponents and opponents to provide testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Daryl James, that's D-A-R-R-Y-L. James is the common spelling, representing Westmoreland Mining, owner-operator of the Rosebud Mine at Colstrip. I completely agree with the sponsor. Very simple cleanup bill, born out of some real-life experiences at the mine where we had what we considered to be pretty minor changes. But DEQ looked at it and said, gosh, you know, it's difficult to tell whether this is really a minor revision or whether this is a major revision or would require new MEPA analyses and all this stuff. And it literally just a couple of examples. We had two adjacent permitted areas. We had a road along the permit boundary to make sure that we could maximize coal production. They moved a berm over onto the adjacent permitted boundary. DEQ came out and said, that's a violation of your permit. So we got a ding letter for that, had to move the dirt back over, and so it's just a less efficient way to mine that out. If we look at the difference between what was originally planned in the mine plan, you look at an overall permit boundary, and you're going to mine out this area, you're going to have a spoil pile here, you're going to put topsoil here, you're going to have a maintenance road through here. Any change could be regarded as a major revision under the existing definitions. What we're saying is if you decide, again, that coal prices are where they should be, that you could actually make a couple more runs, as long as that additional disturbance area does not exceed 320 acres, as long as you're not going outside those boundaries, that should be a minor revision. We've run through these things with DEQ. They're all sensible changes. It doesn't really change the impacts that have been analyzed previously. So should be pretty easy to move forward with those kinds of revisions. Again, anything outside the permit boundaries, anything over 320 acres would be a major revision, would require more detailed environmental analyses beyond what was originally done. Pretty simple, but happy to stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Shelby DeMars. For the record, that's DEMARS here today on behalf of the Montana Association of Oil, Gas, and Coal Counties. We rise in support of this bill. We think it is abundantly reasonable. One of the reasons we are supporting it is because it is very clear and it's very limited in scope. As you've heard from the other proponents, it very specifically clarifies what constitutes major versus minor, and we think that's a very necessary clarification that has needed to be made for quite some time. One of the reasons we feel like that's important is because a lack of clarity in our statutes lends itself to litigation down the road. And while clearing things like this up doesn't prevent all litigation, it does go a long way to minimizing that. And as we've seen in the past, that has been a major issue with a lot of our development here in the state of Montana is a business will go, it will get its permit, it will do everything right. They will go above and beyond to check all of the boxes, to do things the right way, to be responsible and develop our natural resources. And because of a caveat or a lack of clarity in some statute, oftentimes that ends up in the courts and it stalls development for, in some cases, years or decades. So that's some of the primary reasons why we are in support of the bill. We also believe that this just streamlines access to our natural resources. If a permit has already been granted, there's no reason for a very, very minor instance or change for them to have to go all the way back through that very onerous permitting process. So with that, we would encourage your support on the bill.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record again, my name is Peggy Trenk, spelled T-R-E-N-K, and I'm here today on behalf of the Treasure State Resources Association. I can't think of a single substantive thing to add to the testimony you've already heard. I would just like to indicate our support for the bill, and I just want to circle back and thank the sponsor. I was at the House hearing, and the amendments in the bill do reflect a lot of the concerns that were raised in that hearing, so I appreciate the responsiveness. I would also like to add that support of Northwestern Energy on behalf of Chris Poirier, and with that, we ask for a due pass.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, my name is George Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S, the Executive Director of the Montana Coal Council, and given the hour and the testimony previously given, I just rise in support of the amendments that are made. I also sat through the hearing at the House and really appreciate the sponsor bringing it forward and the efforts and the testimony of Mr. James and previous testimony. I can't add to it. And just thank you for your time, and we recommend a due pass.
Thank you. Further proponents? Devlin, are there any proponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there any opponents online?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Opponents in the room? Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tom Baratta, B-A-R-A-T-T-A, and I live in the Bull Mountains near Roundup, Montana. House Bill 656 is a very risky bill that could have long-term impacts on property owners, ranchers, and farmers, as well as allowing permanent damage to valuable wildlife and recreation areas. I live a little over a mile outside of a coal mine permit boundary. The closer mining activity gets to the permit boundary, the closer it gets to my well and my home. A great deal of damage to land and water can happen within a 320-acre area, or even within an acre area. If you refer to the letter that was handed out to you before, it outlines some of our concerns as landowners. As you can see outlined in the letter from landowners, below are our concerns with the bill and amendments we'd like to see included. While I appreciate the amendment to ensure a surface landowner receive notification of a revision, it does not allow for these property owners to comment on the impacts. I believe that landowners like us should have the ability to provide feedback on revisions that can impact our property and our livelihoods. I also think that the department needs to be in charge of providing notice to landowners and getting comments from the landowners, because in our experience in the Bull Mountains, we don't feel comfortable relying on the company to determine what's proper notification. Since expansion of up to 320 acres within a permit boundary can now be considered minor revisions, there will be limited analysis as to the impacts, short-term and long-term, that the expansion will have. Therefore, determining who is affected could be difficult, since the expansion could happen with limited evaluation on the impacts caused by the mining. Therefore, landowners within 2 miles of the minor revision site should be explicitly included in required notification of minor permit revisions. Therefore, page 1, line 27 should be removed. There should be a new subsection under the department shall. The amendment should say the department has provided notice of the application for permit revisions and the opportunity to submit comments to the affected surface and adjacent landowners who are within 2 miles of the revised area. Landowners should have the rights given to mining operations and be granted the ability to be heard when these revisions endanger private property. We have the right to protect our lands and ways of life. Please keep the balance of power equal and allow the property owners the rights to be heard and valued in protecting our lifetime investments, our way of life, and the natural beauty of our area. Please put citizens' rights over corporate profiteering. Without our proposed amendments to HB 656, we ask you to vote no.
Thank you. Further opponents? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Derf Johnson, DERFJOHNSON, and I represent the Montana Environmental Information Center. The day is getting late, so I will make this quick. I agree with a lot of what the last opponent said. Simply requiring notice on the part of the applicant does not meet the standard under the Constitution, does not meet the standard for being a good neighbor. If there are potentially issues that could arise from an expansion, there should be opportunity for those folks to point things out. And I would suggest that there be a revision or an amendment to this that would allow for that. In addition, I have some concerns with the definition of minor revision. I think it has come a little way in terms of the 320-acre expansion, where it reads that increases the area of land affected by mining activities within a permitted area by a total of less than 320 acres from the amount initially approved. My question is that whether that captures all minor amendments or only applies to a single amendment, the concern being, of course, that multiple amendments could allow for a mine to expand without a thorough analysis. So I would ask for some potential clarification there, and I would ask for you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents? Further opponents?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I have somebody online that would like to speak. He just didn't sign up for this bill.
Okay, let's go, let's finish up in the room, and then we can maybe, where he wasn't signed up, we can probably still give some latitude for maybe 1 or 2 minutes at the very end for that person.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Clint McRae, MC, capital R, little A, little E, and I would ask if I could turn this into the secretary. Mr. Chairman, committee members, House Bill 656 has a couple of law changes that I view as problematic. Number one, it's been covered before, but the 320 acres. Was in minor revision. I question that. 320 acres is a half a section, and there can be a lot of issues within that half a section that can impact the adjacent landowners and agriculture. 320 acres, for the record, is 1 mile long by a half mile wide, so that's a pretty good chunk of country. The negative impacts of a 320-acre mine permit can negatively impact the adjacent landowners' private land and their water rights further down gradient. Water quality and quantity issues do not stop at a permit boundary. So 320 acres of mine impact, I believe, is maybe too much of a threat to adjacent public land. Number two, not allowing landowners to comment on permit revisions. We've got to let these landowners comment on this, whether you know they're adjacent or not, because the negative impacts for mining don't always be right next door. It can be water quality issues don't know boundaries. It can be a few, several miles downstream or down gradient. Three, only including affected surface owners in the notification. I think the assumption is adjacent, it should be a little more than that. We need to include all agricultural interests. And number four, landowner notification needs to come from the DEQ, not the permittee. So permittee notification is self-serving and I believe is a conflict of interest. The DEQ represents, or should represent, the best interest of the public, not a mining company. House Bill 656 cuts landowners out of the process, which is, to me, is unacceptable, and the cost of production should not be passed on to adjacent landowners. I think, as it stands, House Bill 656 is not the best idea. I question whether it is really responsible development, and as it is written, I ask you to vote no on House Bill 656. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
My name is Pat Teeley, represent Bull Mountain Land Alliance. And in our experience with the underground mine in our area, the observation that a previous speaker made is very pertinent. DEQ has granted the Signal Peak mine some 270 minor permit revisions. Imagine if each one of those was 320 acres. And Mr. Chairman, if I may, we neglected to pass out another handout earlier.
Yeah, by all means.
These are photographs of unrepaired for several years surface subsidence cracks from the underground mine.
Thank you. Further opponents? Further opponents? Seeing none. Okay, Mr. Charter, you're welcome to come into the room. If you would keep your comments to a minute or two, we would appreciate it. We're allowing you some flexibility where you didn't get signed in for this particular hearing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to do that. My name is Steve Charter, C-H-A-R-T-E-R, and as the other landowners articulated, my main concern I have with this bill is the inclusion of 320 acres of additional mining activity into the definition of a minor permit revision. But I do really appreciate Representative Perry's and Westmoreland's willingness to work with landowners to get to amendments to 656 to ensure that affected surface owners will be notified if a minor permit revision is granted. However, I want to explain why further amendments to protect landowners and ranchers are necessary. Part of my ranching operation is within the mine permit boundary. Therefore, there could be more mining activity in parts of my ranch that were previously unanticipated. This could have substantial impacts to my operations. As longwall mining machines move forward, shearing the coal that it removes, the ceiling of overburden behind the machinery collapses into the area once occupied by the coal. This subsurface collapse can impact geology, creating cracks or depressions known as subsidence. These cracks can range from 6 to 15 feet wide, and some have been more than 20 feet deep. Some cracks are nearly a quarter mile in length. Even narrower subsidence cracks than what I just described can be a significant, as a cow or a horse stepping into a crack obscured by grass could easily break a leg. Trucks can get stuck in these subsidence cracks, which I experienced. And just because this is planned subsidence, it doesn't lessen the impact. So I asked my neighbor to pass out those photos to you. And I have one correction is one of those largest subsidence cracks has been repaired, but many of them haven't. And these subsidence cracks are worse, in my experience, at the beginning of the longwall panels. Therefore, any amount of acreage being added to the end of a longwall panel within the permit area would be a major concern. And I would not only like to be notified, but would like to be able to comment on that. Therefore, as this bill stands right now, I would ask you to vote no, but I'm definitely open to more amendments. And thank you again for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Charter. Seeing no other opponents, questions from the committee? Informational witnesses, sorry.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sonia Nowakowski, S-O-N-J-A-N-O-W-A-K-O-W-S-K-I, Administrator for the Air, Energy, and Mining Division at the Department of Environmental Quality, available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nowakowski. And there, just to make sure, there's no informational witnesses online, correct, Devlin?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Gillespie.
Mr. Chair, maybe for Mr. Charter online.
Go ahead.
Yes, Representative.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Charter. Explain, time's getting late, but these pictures intrigue me. Is that because of just erosion, or is there some other? I mean, I see you've got a lot of grass there, a lot of material. I like that. That means that it maybe could be erosion, but is it really that or something else, and why didn't they take care of it when it first started?
No, it's not erosion. It's when the subsidence occurs, the ground drops like, I think, 7 feet. And in some, not in all areas, but in some areas, it doesn't happen evenly and then cause those big subsidence cracks. Okay. And in fairness, they have repaired many of these cracks, but they don't want to do it on steep slopes, which a lot of it's steep slopes. Okay. And on a lot of them, they haven't, you know, some of those cracks have been there over 2 years, and they haven't replaced them at this point. So it's definitely an issue.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions, and let's try to stay on the bill with your questions, please. Further questions from the committee? Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess for either Dan or Sonia, whomever.
Ms. Nowakowski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Nowakowski. So when you do your original environmental review on a mining or reclamation plan, do you make the assumption that the entire mining area that's covered by the mining plan will be mined and reclaimed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers, that's my understanding of the overall permit boundary that is established in that assessment.
Follow-up. So I guess the only other question I have is, from your perspective, what's magic about 320 acres?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Flowers, I think that was, I'm not sure how the number was selected. I think that was just determined to be the right number. I think that might be a better question for the sponsor of the bill proponents, Mr. Chair.
Can I redirect?
Redirect.
Redirect to either the sponsor or Mr. James.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers, we took some of this language from Hard Rock, which has a much smaller threshold, but those are much smaller mines. So when you think about the total acreage of a large permit area within a coal mine, the percentage is very similar to what exists in Hard Rock statute. So it was somewhere around 400 or 500 acres would be the same percentage as exists in the Hard Rock statute. We thought that was a little excessive and just brought it back down to a half section.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Curdy.
The question from Senator Flowers took my question.
Oh, okay. Okay, further questions, Senator Lang? Senator Sales?
Thank you. Thank you. For the sponsor, just quickly, Ms. Chair, Senator Representative Perry, I'm guessing that over in the House side, some of this notice to the exterior landowners that we heard about. So can you give me your thoughts and just how you addressed or decided not to amend that in and instead of beating another dead horse on this side?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it actually didn't really come up. So the amendment came in to make sure that they were notified. If there's in there some kind of inclination to have them be able to at least comment, I wasn't aware of it on the other side. Oh,
okay. Thank you for that. And then if I could have Sonia come up and just answer. Thank you, Representative. Ms. Chair, if I could. Sonia, in the permitting process, and I'm sure, right, letting these folks maybe know that to be part of the process, is there a list or a way that if this happens that it would be added to this amendment to where they're also notified for at least notice?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sales, under the current minor revision process, DEQ must issue a decision within 60 days and there's no public comment period. So this bill actually increases or adds in public notice, Mr. Chair, Senator Sales.
So if I could just, so then the way I understand that is they then would have notice or these folks should know that have concern?
Mr. Chairman, based on the language in Section 1 on page 1, lines 27 and 28, that's new language that would include evidence that the permittee provided notice of the application for permit revision to the affected surface owners.
Okay, then if I could, apparently maybe, thank you, that there, oh, I'm sorry, Sonia, a follow-up for you, I know.
No problem.
Public notice is one thing, but would there be a way to, and again, on a list on the original, if there were a way to reach to those folks is what I'm getting at, that they've already been part of the process of the original permit?
I see, Mr. Chair. I would need to get back to you on that. I'm not sure what kind of list we maintain for the original permit. These span over 20 to 40 years,
I'm sure. Yeah.
I can find out and get back to you, though.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Lang.
For Ms. Sonia Nowakowski, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Nowakowski, in testimony here today, we've talked about where this revision is maybe needed, which I understand a minor revision. But apparently in the past, DEQ has been revisions for a road or some piling of material been requested, and DEQ said no. Okay, yeah, maybe because they didn't do it, maybe because it was new permit required, I guess would be the answer for that. I'm trying to think, has there been any minor revisions before this law or this change of this word that we would, some kind of revision we would call a minor revision, and how, what's the success or the problems going with that?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Senator Lang. So as Representative Perry pointed out, currently in rule, it's ARM 17.24.301, sub 72. A minor revision is a change to the minor reclamation plan that doesn't meet the criteria of being an amendment or a major revision. And so examples of that we have used have included adding or changing soil stockpiles, sediment control ponds, some facility buildings, roads, minor changes to mining configurations or handling, and adjustments to the approved post-mine land topography, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Nowakowski.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Perry.
Before I actually close, as an example, the mine at Colstrip is like 25 miles long and about 7 or 8 miles wide, depending on where you are. So 320 acres in there is a fairly minor section of land. So I'd like to remind the committee that we're not changing the substantive protections of post-mine land use or water quality with this bill. All we're doing is providing clarity on when a permit holder can move forward with minor modifications in their mining activities with a rudimentary review from the department. And when we want to require a more exhaustive review of changes, it impacts for those originally contemplated when the permit was issued. It should also be made clear in Section 1 of the bill that the legislature's intent is to place the burden on the applicant to ensure Montanans that these changes will have no significant change in long-term impacts than those disclosed under the original permit. That, I want to make sure we're clear on that. We're simply trying to provide an opportunity to expedite reviews and approvals and to keep one of Montana's most important energy sources flowing, to keep Montanans working on a continuous basis, and to minimize opportunities for obstructionists to challenge sensible decisions from the Department of Environmental Quality. With that, I ask I thank you and ask for a due pass.
Thank you, Representative. This brings to a close House Bill 656. Okay. Members, we don't have anything scheduled for Friday, so I think any exec that we would need to take, we can do that next week as well. So if there are any, what? No, we're good. Anyway, we can. I think we can take that up on Monday. If anybody has any amendments that they're working on, we probably want to get those riding because we're going to start running into deadlines sooner rather than later. Thank you so much for your attention at this late hour. This brings to a close Senate Natural Resources meeting adjourned.